Hello, Scorpio, and welcome to Astrology Studio for your sign for 2024 plus. This reading is going to look a little bit ahead than I normally do. That's because of the rather transitional nature of 2024 and the long-term transits that are about to take hold. I'm working on Monday, the 6th of November. Thank you for booking the delay in this work. I got out of town early next week and hung out on the Rhode Island coastline and allowed my soul to gradually rearrange itself around these changes that have come into my life, and I feel like I'm here and fully present for you. So again, thank you, and also for understanding my policy around doing readings where I don't take risks with my clients by in any way being spiritually unprepared to do the work at the time that needs to be done. Okay, so extraordinary solar return chart for Scorpio this year. Genuinely, if nothing else, the mere presence of so many personal planets in your sign at the time of your solar return. Hold on, I'm loading up a current chart. I've got my handwritten one for this reading that I will share with you. But currently in Scorpio and throughout the duration of the season, of course, the Sun and Mars and Ceres and Mercury. And so that is a very strong sense of self-presence. Mars is in classical astrology, which I tend to lean toward despite my additional use of modern planets, is ruled by Mars. So, you want Mars, what's called, in its domicile. That is a good thing. And for you, and rare enough that it happens. I mean, Mars can be in any sign with the Sun in any sign. It's not like Venus or Mercury where they have to hang close to the Sun because they're interior to the Earth's orbit. Mars is exterior to the Earth's orbit. And so when the Sun's in Scorpio, we can find it anywhere in the entire zodiac. And it happens to be with you now, empowering, it's a stupid word, but juicing up your ability to focus your will. I'm going to lower the gain a little bit. Focus your will, and also helping you make up your mind. And also, planets in Scorpio tend to bestow psychological insight. And so I reckon that that you've got some of that with you, and plenty of energy. Often the opposite location in the chart of your sign is where you find what the world has on offer, seemingly from the outside. And there is plenty here, although, and there has been for a while, only at the moment it is, I think you're finally getting the sense that you can benefit from some of these changes. Scorpio is a fixed sign, which means that it is part of the backbone of the zodiac, which goes through the cross quarters, Taurus, Scorpio, Leo, Aquarius. Those four signs make various cameo appearances in things like the Tarot and the Book of Revelations, and are part of the main axis of the personality and spiritual system that we call the zodiac. And it is probably true that you prefer things to be a certain way, usually the way that you like, and then to stay that way for a while and not be in constant flux and fluctuation. And you count on that, and people count on you for that. However, as you know, since 2018-2019, Uranus, the planet that is the least associated with stability of all the planets, the one that is the most about spontaneous and unexpected change and developments that were seemingly unforeseen, has been moving through your opposite sign, Taurus. Taurus, for its part, is probably the most fixed of the fixed signs. It is fixed Earth. Earth is the most fixed of all the elements, and so you've got a double fixed thing going on with Taurus, which is the kind of anchor of all stability. And when you put Uranus in there, then strange things can happen. And the strange things that can happen include a reversal of that stability, and also a kind of a lack of irony about that, where someone who might have been very stable and knew they were very stable for 5 or 10 or 20 years, for example, might completely start doing something else, being a certain way, quite different, and not mention that, oh, by the way, I know that I was so stable all those years, and now all of a sudden I'm not stable. Rather, it would just show up as, this is the way things are now, and we will skip all the formalities, and might be leaving you wondering. And so what this has represented is likely to be, and I haven't heard any, I've been talking about this for a while, and no one said, well, no, you're not exactly right here. I mean, the astrology is fairly obvious, but an unmooring of certain relationships that were previously extraordinarily stable, and then they are suddenly behaving, or people are responding, or the situation is happening in a different way. There is a likelihood mixed in with this that you were ready for this, although it might have taken you time to admit that, and you might not necessarily have even gotten around to it yet. That you wanted a little more freedom, and unfortunately, in pair bonded, dyadic, as they're called in polyamory relationships, there is not very much latitude. There would seem to be either in our time anyway, very high expectations and total stability at all costs, or a complete breakdown. And so what has been necessary is should the partners involved in any presumed relationship that I'm talking about want the relationship, there has to be room to compromise. There have to be gray areas. There has to be a discussion. And it is possible that this has not been the case. Uranus is not exactly the most sublime planetary influence. It tends to veer toward a kind of a foregoing of morals and of expectations. And as they say, it is what it is. And that is often like thunder striking. And so this is led, whatever this is about, whether this has had an influence on one relationship or whether generally it's influenced your relationships and your sense of stability and belonging, you're in a world that is less predictable, and you've been in this world that's less predictable for at least 4 or 5 years as you have kind of adapted to this influence. It turns out that this is really important preparation for a forthcoming transit, which is Pluto in Aquarius. So let's talk about that. And before we get into the Pluto part, I want to talk about what it means to have Aquarius as the fourth place in your solar chart. Now, just as a brief background on on what the solar chart is. The solar chart presumes Scorpio as the reference point. This is true. You might be a Scorpio with Leo rising, but we're not going to worry about that right now. We're going to consider Scorpio as the reference point for the entire reading. And as such, Scorpio becomes the solar chart is the chart for the sign rather than the person. Now, the person and the sign have a lot in common, and these solar charts work a lot better than they should, given astrology's whole obsession with getting the birth time right. We don't even need the birth year, the birthday. We don't need anything except the sign itself. And there is potentially helpful, relevant information that can come out of this. So in this chart, in this solar chart, Aquarius is the fourth place from the reference sign, which is Scorpio. And said another way, talking about the fourth house, I use the words place and house interchangeably. And the fourth is the ground on which the chart is built. It is the tap root. So the sign that is on the fourth in any chart for any particularly human situation, not, for example, you know, the invention of, you know, whatever or something, but a human chart, people, an event in someone's life, a birth, something like this. So the fourth is the emotional environment, and it is a kind of a replica of the early family environment. Both houses three and four have this in their own way. And for you, by the way, both houses three and four are ruled by Saturn. Capricorn is house three for Scorpio. And we're going to get into the long influence of Pluto through Capricorn. And Aquarius, where Pluto is going, is also a Saturn-ruled sign. Again, I tend to use the classical rulers. There's a connection between Uranus and Aquarius, but it does not tell us as much about Aquarius as Saturn does. And one of my kind of maxims for young astrologers teaching astrology is that if you want to understand Aquarius, understand Saturn. If you want to understand Saturn, understand Aquarius. And what we have with Saturn is the necessity for structure and accountability and the reality principle. This applies to some of the very most personal locations in your chart. Again, house three, how you think; house four, how you feel, and where you seek stability. Now, I have noticed among Scorpio friends a near obsession with family. There would be no other way to explain this, but the kinds of old world loyalty and affinity that even younger Scorpios feel for their families, and I have not wanting to stray far, and the sense of tremendous responsibility for elders, and the need for the family as an orientation point of belonging in the whole world. This I associate with having Aquarius as the fourth place of Scorpio. The connection is Scorpio. Aquarius is a sign of groups, and the fourth is the sign of family. And wherever you find Aquarius in the chart, you're going to find that need for community and that need to belong. It's as if it's the first place you're going to go to find your group affinity. It could be in the fifth house. You could be a Libra, and you might seek your affinity among those with whom you have some talent that you share, or some creative vision, or some recreational experience. But as Scorpio, that need to orient on being together is going to generally be within the home, and within the family home, and any home that you make must have some keen sense of of reproducing that in some way. I'm sure there are some Scorpios that live alone, but it's also likely that that their homes are the place where your friends gather. And so you can just, you know, consider that, that alignment as being one of the things that tells you among the most things about Scorpio. There's always one or two things about a sign that tell you the most. For example, just to give an example, and I'll come back to it, you have Aries on the sixth house. The sixth is considered the house of work, and most people wouldn't think that they would admit to wanting to be identified primarily with the work that they do. But for a Scorpio, the work you do is very important. And even if it's not the thing that you say is the most you about you, it never works for you to do work that you do not completely identify with. And it doesn't matter what the role is. You could manage a grocery store. You could be a realtor. You could write rock lyrics. But whatever that thing is, that has to be some place where you feel like you can genuinely be yourself. And so in a similar way, the grouping occurs in the fourth and around family. Now, we are in a very strange time for any forms of social grouping, for any forms of family, and you're probably in a pretty good place because you have this orientation. But what is happening is that all of these things are being taken over by basically digital transactions, many of which involve the exchange of money. The entire social environment has become a transactional environment where it seems to mean very little to people that they have to subscribe to a service in order to do something that you used to be able to just go out and do, which is meet people. And that not only do you have to subscribe to a service, but the service is making decisions for you about who you might potentially meet, as opposed to looking across the room and thinking, oh, that person looks friendly and interesting, I'll go talk to him. No. Now everything is controlled through this transactional device, and that has been profoundly influencing everything that surrounds the social environment, and that is symbolized by Aquarius. And you have this, fortunately, in a place that is very close to home. It is unlikely that you need to place a personal ad to find your cousin or something like that, right? Your cousin is your cousin. And for those who have Aquarius situated other places, there's going to be a more transactional influence. However, it is worth paying attention to the ways in which this, you know, now a completely ubiquitous digital environment has influenced your household life and your family life. And to go back, I would say, I mean, how well, 30 years is not so long ago these days. I would say go back to before the turn of the millennium, well before, go to the 1990s, the pre-9/11 world, and consider the patterns that your family had and preferred and experienced, and whether and how and where you got together in person. And tell that story and the story of the changes that have come into your emotional life, your familial life, your household life, and the way that you relate to your relatives as the digital age has gradually taken over the past 20 to 30 years. The reason I say this is, first of all, it's a worthwhile exercise, but also the main reason is because Pluto is coming, and we're going to need to understand what this is about as it changes. So there are two main possibilities, and I do need other suggestions for other options, and maybe they'll come up in the course of this monologue, to understand what this influence of Pluto in Aquarius is going to be about. The reality field of digital technology and of the internet, the robot, has taken on a life of its own, and it has largely taken over most people. In other words, they are not the person that they were before they were constantly exposed to digital technology, and therefore are going to behave and respond in ways that are different from the person who they originally were. Meaning, depending on how old they were, up till the time when the use of digital technology became habituated by them and in the world around them. And so the sudden infusion, well, it's going to seem sudden in hindsight. It's taking place over the course of 18 months, but when we look back, we will see that it actually began considerably before those 18 months and came on fast and furious. The power of the environment and the environmental conditioning is something that we are going to experience under the influence of Pluto and Aquarius. We got a taste of this when an emergency was declared in early 2020, and people felt for a long period of time that this thing being announced on the internet was more important than their familial bonds. There is no reason, whatever you think this thing happened in 2020 was, or whether it was, there was no reason for it to be used to rip apart families and social groups. And one of the things I suggest that you consider the most carefully is what happened to your family and the social groups that focus around your household. That's the fourth house. So that means if you have share a home with some people, or you have housemates or a partner and friends, or living in some way with your family of origin, to consider the influence that that this claimed emergency had on you and your family. And I suggest you be objective in questioning it. In other words, not assuming that it was true that there was a reason to panic or there was not a reason to panic, but rather looking at the emergency as it was claimed to be, what was the impact on your family life? And how has it influenced you in the long term? How do people feel about each other now? Is there any sense people have that perhaps they overreacted or reacted inappropriately in some way, perhaps made some mistakes? Has there been any review of that? Have these bonds that in some ways, you know, blood is thicker than water, but then in other ways, that bad blood can really take hold when people are under stress. And assess whether there has been a healing process. And I would propose that in these months before Pluto arrives in Scorpio, Pluto arrives in Aquarius, which is in January, that you do what you can to take this holiday season to make amends with each other, to heal up some of this, and offer or be open to any apologies. Now, I do recognize that people can be incredibly stubborn. The reason I'm saying this, though, is because it is entirely likely that there are going to be more of these crises foisted upon people, and they can take all different shapes and forms. They can take the form of someone announcing at a holiday dinner or at some kind of a family gathering, they think the world is flat, or they think that Paul McCartney is a fraud, or they think whatever they think. And really, what is going on here is digitally induced divisiveness. The game that is being played right now against all of us, you do not need to look far to see this, is to divide people. And the most important social bond in all of society that holds society up is the family. And so this is where you are going to be feeling the influence of Pluto the most strongly. Now, this can have, as I said, a diversity of influences on you and on the group around you. One, for example, can be experiences of being overpowered by this, by these influences, which are often completely synthetic. Another can be that the group that surrounds you goes through a group initiation. That's a concept we don't hear about very much, which is a group of people, whatever the nature of that group, are confronted by some form of a spiritual situation, a situation that compels them in some way to rise to the occasion and respond together. Now, it does not always happen that way. And often the opportunity to work things out together is foreshadowed, overshadowed by some powerful influence. And the most fearful among the group get their way because they are speaking the most loudly and throwing down the most forcefully. Another possibility is that you will feel a need to be independent from whatever group that you have been in. This is often the case of any type of placement of Pluto in the fourth. When you associate Pluto with the fourth in some kind of a natal chart or progress chart or something like this, there's a message about being emotionally independent from people. And here's where Uranus going through Taurus the past 4 or 5 years comes in, which is that you have been getting this messaging, this signal from in your environment that you need to be more independent from partners, and you need to be more independent generally from the expectations that you place on the world. Now, Uranus is a powerful influence, and relationships are subtle, they're fragile. However, despite the strength of this influence of Uranus, which I think you may only first be seeing the benefits of now, it does not hold a candle to Pluto entering Aquarius. And the reason for this is, think of it this way. Uranus is an electrical influence, is associated with Aquarius. I just don't say that it rules it, but it's definitely associated with it. And it's an electrical, technological, disruptive influence. Uranus foreshadows the entire industrial age. The discovery of Uranus, 1781 or something, foreshadows the industrial age and the age of electricity and electronic communication and computing and all of that. And pretty much in the first century, in the first century of Uranus having been discovered, we see all of these things start to happen. The telegraph is invented in that first century and so forth. So Uranus in Taurus is like taking that energetic influence and adding it to the physical realm. Taurus is the physical realm. Aquarius is the social realm and the energetic realm that surround us both. So the waves in Aquarius represent energy, but Aquarius, as we know, also represents groups and the patterns that groups form, which are always influenced by the dominant technology of the time. But it is an environment in which we are swimming. It is something that surrounds us on all sides, above and below. And so when there is a jolt to that environment, when the entire environment is activated in a new way, as it is going to be by Pluto in Aquarius, that feels like the entire world is being affected and influenced all at once. And the problem with those kind of events is very few people are able to have the perspective to say, ah, this is what's going on. Something very, very large around us is happening. An example can be found in the 2020 crisis for anyone who is willing to observe this objectively, to set aside the storyline that we were given and just look at what happened to society. And what happened to society was there was a sudden, immediate rush of everything being sucked into the digital realm that was not already there. Everything from nursery school to Harvard wound up online. Everything from airlines to restaurants wound up online. Zoom, Uber Eats, and so forth. They were all there. That had all started before the 2020 crisis, but the 2020 crisis was a massive consolidation of things that were swept out of the out of the physical three-dimensional realm and into this alternative reality. Whatever you think that was about, we cannot deny how much ended up there that was not originally there or were just taken over the rest of the way. And if you look around the world and feel your way around the world, you know that there's less here in physical, emotional, social space. So there, the main ways this might influence is a sudden jolt of power that destabilizes or takes over all this group-related stuff in the fourth, or a group initiation of some kind. The group meaning Aquarius, the initiation being Pluto, where there is a kind of a return to collective soul being sought, not being sought, but like what becomes the obvious thing to do. Or third, you determining that you need to be more independent from all of the above. That does not mean that you are without any needs. It does not mean that you that you necessarily dissociate yourself in some way, but rather that you shift your orientation and that you ensure that your roots go deeper than any group. The challenge with having Aquarius in the fourth place, and whatever the fourth may represent, it all depends on the person in the chart, is that there can be a dependency on what is in the fourth place, whatever that represents, and a need indicated by, for example, a powerful transit like a Pluto transit, to go deeper than that dependency, to go beneath the expectations, to go beneath the childhood influences that may have affected you through that time, and the expectations that you came to have. And in real terms, I think this says, know who you care about and spend as much time with people in physical human form as possible. there is this tremendous tendency now to never meet people that we consider our friends, and this is a combination of how instantaneously involving the digital sphere is versus along with all this time that it seems to take up. This labor-saving device seems to be consuming most of our time and most of our energy, and making it very difficult to think you can do something like take 2 days out of your life and drive somewhere and meet someone. But I can promise you that such has never been more important. And for you to schedule a gathering, get people together. Does not need to be a funeral or a wedding to get the family together. And by the way, possibility number four on that list of possibilities, I'll go through them again, which is the raw power of the web taking over, the group initiation, your independence from the group. Possibility four is your taking leadership within the group, which can encompass the other three possibilities, but includes you taking responsibility for much more than you may have in the past. And that responsibility would necessarily include your awareness. Someone has to be aware of these changes, and someone has to be able to describe the situation in a way that's compelling enough for someone else to listen to. Okay, so I've spent a good bit of time. Let's see, we've covered a good bit of time on the angular houses. We covered Scorpio, your sign. Now there's a let's go over the contents of the other angular houses. We talked about Taurus briefly. I'm going to come back to that in a moment. So in Scorpio, the kind of current orientation on identity is look, it's we come back again to you taking leadership of the enterprise of your life. And so to the extent that enterprise involves your group and your loved ones, absolutely. To the extent that that enterprise just involves you figuring out what to do in the world, you are being called on to take leadership and not to simply go along with trends, but rather to buck the trends, set the trends, something in your own life. Now, the asteroid Narcissus is in Scorpio. Now, what's interesting about Narcissus is I don't view this as the psychological disorder of narcissism, which is a problem in the digital age. But what I take from that story, and I learned this from Marshall McLuhan, is that the thing that distinguished Narcissus, I mean, he's the one who fell in love with his reflection in the pond and wasn't that interested in all the absolutely delightful, beautiful nymphs and goddesses who were fluttering around the forest with him, is that he did not know that it was his own reflection. So this was, I guess, what you could call an unconscious experience, and that face peering up at him from the pond certainly could be viewed as a window into the unconscious. And the reminder here, the reminder of Narcissus, is to be aware that you are constantly in the presence of your own reflection that you don't know is your own reflection. So I'm not one of these spiritual teacher types who lectures the world on how everything is about projection and there really is no subject-object divide, blah, blah, blah. This gets harsh, and you can't give that lecture without getting involved in the very thing that you are attempting to decry or warn people against. But what we can say in a humane way, and in a way that leaves us a little room to be ourselves, is that it's important to pay attention to when you are in an environment that is reflecting itself back to you, yourself back to you, and to ask yourself, in what way is this a reflection of some facet of my consciousness? That'll get you pretty far. If you even break the spell even slightly, the spell being that Narcissus did not know that that seeming other person was him. Well, what would intervene? Tossing a pebble into the pond? Maybe that would do it. So it would be unlikely that Narcissus himself would do this, but you are not Narcissus. You're someone who's under the influence of this story, of this psychological idea, this image. Toss a pebble into the pond. See how the world looks different and how you look different when there are ripples. Okay, now, relationship house, Taurus. Now, I've talked about Uranus quite a bit going through this house. And we'll probably break for the next music right around the time I'm done talking about Taurus. First of all, there's been a very powerful eclipse here recently, and that is an influence on you. That is showing you the opening, the need for looking beyond the reality as you currently see it or experience it, and you're likely to have experienced this opening. This eclipse was was the weekend right before Halloween. I think the third. What day was that? The 28th. And that is likely to have given you a kind of a view beyond your current reality, possibly frightening, possibly evocative of the need for independence, and also your sense of fundamental aloneness. I mean, that is something that can happen under the influence of Pluto. And I'm glad that I've got the eclipse drawn into the chart to remind me of this. But I think that fundamental sense of aloneness, despite relationships and despite family and despite, you know, all that, is something we need to remain in relationship to. Now, contrasting with that's just a thing that you, like Narcissus, that you just remind yourself of, or toss the pebble into the pond and see the reflection, the ripples in the reflection. Jupiter is there, and Jupiter is offering a sense of something there, a sense of potential, a sense of the possibilities, and a sense of what is available that is new. Despite all that you may have felt that you lost, or that has been radically changed and transformed, there is another possibility. Now, additionally, there is what I have long called 1992 QB1 making its way through Taurus, now called Albion. My assessment of QB1. Is that it is about an invitation into an evolutionary experience, an experience of growth, an experience of spiritual awakening of some kind that is not about having a gun to your head in the style of Pluto. Pluto presents us with the equation. Very often, Pluto presents us with the equation, grow or die. QB1... Albion is a much, much gentler influence, much closer to deer medicine, much closer to the sense of being accompanied rather than being forced into something that you don't want or don't understand.
Thank you.
I think that the idea of the gentle invitation to growth rather than enforced growth is worth mentioning. We live in times when so much is forced upon us, where the nature of every transaction is to include the concept or else, right? It can seem very friendly and bright, shiny packaging and reduction in your interest rates. Or else, there's always some lingering, looming threat. And the presence of Albion, QB1, in your seventh is suggesting that you look consciously for that influence in your life. Look for what is inviting you rather than attempting to enforce something. Now, before we leave the seventh, there's one other thing. In April, there is going to be a really phenomenal conjunction that only happens every 13 years or so, and it only happens in Taurus extremely rarely. I mean, I'm going to guess and say less than once every 150 years. So this is a unique thing for our lifetimes. It's special, and it's real, and it's happening. And this represents a breakthrough of some kind. And so what I'm counseling on the Uranus-Jupiter conjunction, Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, is patience. And not almost like setting it aside like a kind of a time capsule, and then waiting for it to come to fruition. Ultimately, with Uranus, you can't really do very much about it in advance. Though Jupiter tends to bring out some of the far more positive expressions of Uranus than just about anything else. Pluto doesn't do too badly either. I mean, Pluto will really eat all that Uranian energy and move that energy into the evolutionary impulse. I mean, that kind of saved the ass of the 60s, for example. And for those of you born, say, between 63 and 69, 60, 68 or so, it's a tremendously important resource that you have Uranus and Pluto close to each other. Jupiter and Uranus, though, they expand matters. They will expand your social circle, and they together represent such significant meetings that it's worth treating everyone you meet, even now, even though they're some degrees apart now, as far as I know, they're both retrograde. That you treat people with an unusual level of respect and of genuine inquiry, and don't lose your contact. Stay in contact with the people that you meet. And when you meet them, you think, I've got to stay in contact with this person. Stay in contact with that person, with no expectations of how or whether or not it may work out. You just stay in contact. All right, let's go to the fourth of the fixed signs, and we're learning something about astrology here, which is you can kind of skip all the other signs that are not on your cross, but we're still going to do some of them. But you get almost all the information you need just working right on your cross. Your cross is the fixed cross, and so we're now, you know, talked a lot about house 1, Scorpio, house 4, Aquarius, house 7, Taurus. Now let's talk house 10, since we know how important your work is to you. That clue comes from Aries in the sixth. You identify with what you do. And with Leo on the 10th, it is very important to you to have an excellent image around your work, to have an excellent reputation. Now, that's an investment. You may only get a 10%, 5% return on your excellent reputation. You may run at a loss on your excellent reputation for a long time, because it is easier to lie, cheat, and steal and not give a flying fuck what anyone else thinks of you. And in my time witnessing life on Earth, it's quite profitable most of the time for people to not care how anyone perceives them. You just do whatever you want. However, if you're invested in being reputable, if you're invested in being a mensch, as Hebrew, the Yiddish, that's the only word that really means that, means being a decent human being, well, then you work this Leo on the 10th house. And remember that for all of its reputation is this kind of egomaniacal sign, Leo's actual role is to stay calmly and quietly at the center and hold things together. It is a humble task. And so in support of your professional advancement, the advancement of your reputation, the image that you project that helps you, you know, work within the business community, hold things together. That's your primary role, is to coordinate, to be a kind of a gravitational center. That does not mean being bossy. You don't have to be bossy. It's likely enough that responsibility is going to wind up in your lap or on your desk, whether you like it or not. Now, there are a series of minor planets here that, frankly, this is probably the only chart ever cast that includes this constellation of factors, because there's asteroids that the asteroid people don't use, and there's a hypothetical planet that the minor planet people don't use. And so I've got this kind of hybrid collection. It includes, in the 10th, Varuna. Now, Varuna was discovered in 2000, and the astronomers who discovered Varuna thought, this is such a significant thing, we're going to give it an honorary minor planet number. You could usually you get like 1, 3, 6, 3, 4, 0 or something, Pluto, right? And, you know, 2066 Chiron, something like this. But they gave Varuna minor planet number 20,000 to commemorate that this is a really important discovery and discovered in 2000. They gave it a matching number. And what Varuna is about is equality. And this is a certain kind of equality that is about leveling the decks when someone or something becomes too arrogant. It's also about a re-leveling when someone or something needs to be restored to an element of stature that was taken unfairly. And it's a reminder, the story of Varuna is the mythical god of previously of everything reduced to a limited domain. That's basically the story of Varuna. Varuna is also, and I think this may be the essence of the delineation, the enforcer of contracts, the enforcer of agreements. Now, this is why it is important that you hold things together. Much of holding things together is about enforcing agreements, understandings, and contracts. And so you've got this high up and very prominent. Additionally, there is a reminder to account for the mistakes that you've made a few times. That's in the form of asteroid Apollo. So this would be a good afternoon exercise or maybe somebody who, friend who has had an understanding of your life or an understanding of your professional life, and see if you can make a list of mistakes you've made two or more times. Serious things or tendency you might have. And figure out how not to do that. The tendency of Apollo is to keep making the same mistake over and over again. When you have Apollo in the chart, though, you're looking right at it. You don't say to the person, well, you're going to keep fucking up the same way you fucked up the last 30 times. No, no. Obviously, the point is to remind you to do something different. To say, in my very Eric Francis way, well, consider the ways in which you've made the same mistake several times. Right? This is gentle enough, right? I mean, everyone's made mistakes repeatedly. Two or more times. This does not entitle you to automatically win the lottery if you've done this. But with Apollo showing up there, that's a reminder. All right, next case. Asteroid Achilles shows up. Achilles doesn't even have a glyph. As far as I know, Martha Lang Westcott doesn't use it. And I've used it for a long time. Achilles, I believe, is one of the Trojan asteroids. It's got about a 12-year orbit. It's out near Jupiter. So it's orbiting at 60 degrees to Jupiter, if I am not mistaken. And I consider this, I put this into almost every chart, the asteroid Achilles. And it is about, in my delineation, false lack of confidence. What's that? False lack of confidence is when you don't have confidence that you should have. You've accomplished things. You've achieved things. You have attained a level of respect. And yet, your confidence level does not match the actual achievements that you have done. Well, okay, so this is a cause for another inventory to look at the ways that you really owed it to yourself to be more confident in situations and give yourself that in the next situation. Now, confidence is a strange thing. I mean, really, it means to be in fidelity with yourself. And the question is, are you in fidelity with yourself? Are you able to be true to your own purpose? Good question. Last is Vulcanus. This is one of the make-believe planets, does not have a body, only has an orbit and a glyph, and only exists in computer programs and the minds of a very few astrologers and even fewer books. But it's there, and it is simply a lot of energy. And so when we combine the lot of energy with the need to enforce contracts, with the need to recognize the mistakes you've made more than once, with the need to recognize your lack of confidence in places where you should have had confidence, all of those things will be energized whether you deal with them or not, in whatever state they happen to be in. Wow. So, if you are in alignment, you energize that. If you're not in alignment, if you're confuddled, confused and your spine is not stacked, you energize that. If you are allowing yourself to be a kind of a central organizing principle around which the world is organized, you organize that. If you forego that responsibility, you energize that. So, therefore, work on these other 3 or 4 points, because the results of those projects will all be energized. Okay, a couple more visitors in this chart. Pisces-Scorpio thing, it's big, especially big with Jupiter hanging around your seventh house. And the Pisces thing is Pisces people, hello. But it's also the Pisces state of mind, the state of mind where you relax and allow yourself to be a bit of a hedonist. It's always important in case you have some Pisces, strong Pisces in your chart, which you probably do, or you know some Pisces people, or it's just right now and you're a Scorpio and there's a lot of Pisces happening in your chart. One of the things, like if I had to start a book chapter about Pisces, Madeline Aslan wrote, she began her Pisces chapter, "You love critters." Well, I laughed for like the next 20 years. Like, that's all you need to know about Pisces. But if I were writing a Scorpio chapter, I might say, you know, Madeline Aslan says you love critters, but also because you're a Pisces, you need to be a hedonist, not a completely insufferable 24/7, you know, drink the entire wine cellar hedonist, but enough of a hedonist that you can like play various forms of play without getting uptight about it, which means abundant sex, as you can arrange it, which means abundant creativity, as you can arrange it, and Pisces always likes to get stoned on something. I mean, it doesn't mean you're a junkie if you like to hit the bong every now and then, right? If you like to take some mushrooms or something. So my point is that you can exercise this Pisces thing, and Saturn is there, by the way. Saturn is going to provide a boundary and a sense of a natural limit. But the other thing that Saturn offers is Saturnalia, which was the most debauched of the Roman festivals. And so I've never seen that included in any delineation of Saturn in an astrology book. It's as if they have no clue what was going on. But I have, you know, palpable, distinct memories of it. It was quite debauched. And so even Saturn's presence is saying, give yourself a little room to wiggle, to have fun, to have unstructured time, and to have fun for its own sake. That translates to art for its own sake, sex for its own sake, beauty, color, music, expression, all for its own sake. You do not need to know what you plan to paint if you get a set of nice watercolors and nice watercolor paper. Just put the stuff onto the paper and feel what you're doing. Okay, also, let's see now. There's a couple of more points here. Two others. I promised to mention a little bit about Capricorn and the nature of Pluto through Capricorn between 2008 and 2024. Almost over. This has transformed you as a person. If you have, because it's transformed your mental patterns. The third is about your mental patterns. The fourth is about emotional patterns. Yes, you could say this is a completely ersatz distinction. It's just bullshit psychology or categorization that does not need to be there. They're very closely related. Well, sure, they're adjoining concepts. They're adjoining houses. But if you think of Capricorn, the third, communication patterns, communication style, the words that you use, your state of mind. By the way, a bit depressive to have Capricorn on the third. Capricorn is going to be a bit depressive, but you've had Pluto going through there, which has been churning things up for you. So there may have been experiences in this 2008 through 2024 stage where You've really, really had things churned up. And that has been about going deeper and finding out the source of the churning and then swimming in there to find out what's at the bottom of all the churning and generally clearing mental space. I mean, we tend to have such cluttered mental lives. And lives that are so dictated, mental states that are so dictated by the expectations and disappointments of people in the past, long gone, that we really need to clean some of this clutter out. And if Pluto going through the third, through Capricorn, has not done that, I don't really know what will. And what you now have, rather than all of the bric-a-brac and the trunks full of God knows what up in the attic, is a clear line of communication into the ancestral realm. And from the ancestral realm, there are things that will come to you that are coming from the very distant past. It could be four generations back. It could be 50 generations back. But the line is open, and there's information coming about how to regroup. How to regroup. One last point from this chart. You have Libra on the 12th, and there is an absolutely glorious presence in Libra right now, which is Logos, which is the tangible thought communicated, the idea, the word made real. And this is also coming to you from an ancestral realm. And so there is a second major reminder in your chart to be open to influences way back in time for wisdom when it comes to addressing the astounding changes that we are living through and will be living through in these coming years. All right, that's what I have to say to you. If you have any thoughts or questions, please write directly to me at efc@planetwaves.net. Please mark your subject header clearly so it stands out in my inbox. If I don't reply in a few hours, just send it again and just say that you're resending it. And I wish you the very best with this astrology. And I get that there's a theme of leadership that keeps coming up, and another theme of finding strength in the ways of the distant past and finding wisdom in the ways of the distant past. And I think you have it in you to do all these things quite well. Again, thank you for, breaking the delay in this reading. And I'll catch you somewhere on down the line. Lots of love, and bye for now.